Good morning, everyone. We've been following Savitri as she follows the soul of Satyavan that's being led away by death. With great courage and inner strength, she has passed through the eternal night, the journey of eternal night. And last week we began book 10, which has four cantos. This is the book of the double twilight. And in the first canto, Sri Aurobindo shows us the dream twilight of the ideal. But as he often does between one canto and another, between one book and the next, he gives a transitional passage. So last week we read the first section of canto 1, in which they have not yet passed into the twilight. They are still in the night. We read the whole of the first section, and then we went back to the beginning and started looking at it in more detail. And in that more detailed study, we completed page 599 and page 600, and we came to the top of page 601. The last lines that we read were about death. Death is a stair, a door, a stumbling stride the soul must take to cross from birth to birth. A grey defeat pregnant with victory. A whip to lash us towards our deathless state. The inconscient world is the spirit's self-made room. Eternal night, shadow of eternal day. So we'll read on from there. Margaret, will you start?
It's not our beginning, nor our end. She is a dark mother in whose womb we have hid, safe from too swift awaking to world pain. We came to her from a supernal light. By light we live, and to the light we go. Here in the seat of darkness, mute and lone, in the heart of lasting nothingness, light conquered now even by that feeble beam, its faint infiltration during the blind death mass. Almost it changed into a glimmering sight that housed the phantom of an aureate sun whose orb pupilled the eye of nothingness.
Thank you. In the previous canto, we heard death claiming, I, death, am he. There is no other God. And he is claiming that everything has sprung from his vast, dark emptiness, and that everything will go back to that vast, dark emptiness. But here Sri Aurobindo is telling us that is not the case. Eternal night is just a shadow of eternal day, which is the supreme reality. And although our universe seems to have begun from some mysterious darkness with a big bang, and although this half-conscious human world that we live in seems to have emerged from unconscious matter, he tells us that night, darkness, ignorance is not our beginning, and that's not the state that we will go back to when we leave the body. He says she's a dark mother who has been carrying us in her womb. She has been keeping us safely there from too swift awaking to world pain. The world that we will wake to, the world of twilight consciousness, is full of pain and suffering. The inconscient has allowed us to evolve, to prepare, until our souls are strong enough to face the difficulties of, we read in The Life Divine, this pregnant chaos of the world of mind. We came to her, we came to into the night from a supernal light, a transcendent light, and we live by light, and to the light we go. When we leave the body, we will go to the light. So even here in this seat of darkness, this eternal night that Savitri is passing through, in this heart of everlasting nothingness, even now in that darkness, light conquered, because she was carrying with her a feeble beam of light. And he says that that faint light filtered, infiltrated this blind, deaf mass. It almost seems as if it changes into a faint light, a glimmering sight, a power of vision. That sight is, or that light is housing the phantom, the ghost, or spirit of a golden sun with a capital S, a sun of consciousness and vision. And it's like this little sun, it's an orb, it's a sphere, is like the pupil in the eye of that nothingness, forcing it to see. The pupil of your eye is the part that opens, to allow you to see. Justin, you can read. Anything to ask?
Dragon.
The dragon. Yeah, dragons are very interesting creatures. They, of course, always represent some kind of energy. And we in the West are familiar with monster dragons who destroy. In the East, dragons are more beneficent. But their common feature is that they guard treasure, usually in a deep, dark cave. They have piles and piles of treasure. which they don't use, they just sit on it and guard it. So they're the guardians in the darkness, in the inconscient, of many, many wonderful treasures of consciousness.
It breathes
fire.
Only the European dragon.
I'm not sure.
The Oriental dragon, a ball of gold, water. They're very different.
I think Chinese also.
Chinese also fire.
Huh? The mother used to drink. The Chinese also is fire.
Anyway, let's look what it means here. Here, what is interesting is that little light which is following Savitri, or which seems to represent her consciousness, her soul, it brings into that intolerant darkness a power of vision, which is like a fire, a golden fire, like a sun, that's come into the darkness and burns the heart of that power of darkness. This darkness has a mind, which we read about at the very beginning of the poem. Here he mentions its heart. And so in her darkness, night begins to dream. And that must be the origin of this dream world that we are going to step into now. No? The inconscient, the night, grew at least partly conscious. Night begins to feel and to think. So the darkness has to diminish. It has to separate. It grows paler. It draws apart until there's only a few black clouds covering that light, which grows stronger and stronger. It becomes a ray. But still in the background, there's that dragon. It hasn't gone completely. No? This great dragon body of darkness sullenly loomed. It doesn't want to go away. It is the adversary of this dawn. The morning twilight heralds the dawn, no? But the dawn is coming slowly and with difficulty. And this dragon body is opposing it. It's defending its own home ground of tortured mystery, of suffering and darkness. But it does move. It trailed its coils through this dead, martyred air, this air of suffering, and curving fled down a grey slope of time. So even that dragon retreats in the face of this growing light.
I love the landscape of this. And someone's question, you've emphasized night's heart, the light comes into the heart, which makes me think that is the sovereign emptiness.
Now, it's very interesting. I mean, to me, what is very interesting about this passage, after about book seven onwards, Mother stopped making sketches for the Savitri paintings. She gave Huta the freedom to choose the passages, and she didn't give her any sketches. But when it came to this passage, night is not our beginning nor our end, she made two sketches. There's a pencil version and there's a pen version. They're both absolutely marvelous. These are the last sketches that she made for this series. And she told Huta, you have to show Night bending her head as if she is ashamed. So that's what Huta has tried to do in the painting. So no, this is not all triumphant darkness. There's a feeling of shame there.
And she meaning the dark mother?
Meaning Night, yes, the dark mother. Yes. The mother in her inconscient form who has given birth to all of us. But that was not our beginning. We came to her from a supernal light. She's been carrying these beings of light within her, and now they will have to emerge. Yes, Don.
One of the most incredible lines there, I can't really grab it, but I grabbed it. A gray death, a gray defeat, pregnant with victory.
Yes. Yes.
Did I think his words victory?
Loud and loud.
Victory, yes. You want to ask about that? Yes? Well, we may feel when we die that, oh, now I have to leave. I haven't done what I wanted to do in this life. I still have so much more to do. So there may be a feeling of defeat. It seems as if death is conquering us and our urge for more life, for immortality, for more achievement. But he says this may seem like a defeat, but this defeat is going to give birth. It's pregnant. It's going to give birth to a victory, a greater opportunity and possibility. Is that okay?
I don't understand. I want to go back to how you describe Mother's drawing and the instruction to represent the mother death or the mother night as if she were ashamed. And I find that incongruous because the process of holding and being that point at which things were even able to gestate and be within and mature and be safe and then later emerge with the ability to go forward. So I don't understand that terminology.
Perhaps it is because now the light is emerging and she has to stop being night, no? At least she has to become twilight. Something has to give way. The inconscient, the darkness has to give way. Maybe that is why.
Have there ever been perhaps other times where things could have changed, but so many of the forces of the universe and these universal qualities and aspects were just, no, we're not, they refused to make change.
Or it wasn't time, no? All this is an unfolding. So the heart of the rose or the lotus can't reveal itself until it is time. There has to be some preparation. And it does seem, in fact, Sri Aurobindo insists on it, in the universe there seem to be forces whose mission is to resist that unfolding, to challenge it, just as death is challenging Savitri. He's not just going to give her back Satyavan. She's going to have to fight every centimeter of the way, no? But that will make her victory more complete.
Perhaps the words as if ashamed are simply an indicator of a gesture, which means a submission.
Yes, something like that. Yeah. That's what an indication to Huta, yes. And that's what Mother has shown in her sketches, and it's what Huta has tried to express in the painting. Gesture of submission, yeah. Yes. Can you speak up a little bit?
If it's only light that is going to dominate the world, why do we have the night, physical night I'm talking about? Maybe we have physical night in the world. For say you are starting from 7 o'clock in the night to morning 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yes.
So once the twin light that we talk about arise, will this physical world change? Only when this change, that is going to change. That's my logic.
I think it's the other way round. When the subtle world realities change, then there can be a change in the physical universe. But at the moment, our universe is, the physicists have given us a picture of its history, and here we have a sun, but the nature of our existence here on Earth is that the Earth turns so that every part of the Earth gets lit by the sun, but wherever you are, for some hours you pass through the darkness.
Can it be that the light of mother is actually orange, isn't it?
The light of the mother?
Yeah, it's orange. So can we imagine that the sunlight is going to be orange all the time?
I don't know, we can imagine anything. Let us see. Let us see. The Mother, the Supreme, the light of the Supreme Mother, her grace light is pure white, absolutely pure white. So, let's see. So, shall we move on? We did not continue reading. Thank you. Thank you. So, now we'll read the two. Yes. We did not read, you are quite right. So that's what we will do now. We will read to the end of the canto. Another 5 pages. You'll begin, Chitra. Yeah. Thank you. Srinivas.
The ripple of gleaming wings across the far sky. Words of pale blossom, bosom, imagination is filled. probing through the listening ear, as if the sun god's brilliant
kine
was there,
means cattle,
in the mist, in mist, in passing towards the sun. These spiritual beings, these illusive shapes, but all that claimed the eye and met the soul, the natural inhabitants of the world. But nothing there was fixed or stayed for long, no mortal feet to rest upon the soil, no breath of life lingered in body there. And that fine air joy slept, dancing past, and beauty pervaded, subtle line and form, and hid its sense in the space of fuel. Yet, gladness ever repeated the same notes, and gave the sense of an enduring world. There was a strange consistency of shapes, and the same thoughts were constant as a life, and all renewed unendingly its charm, eluding ever expected heart, like music that one always waits to hear, like the recurrence of a haunting life. One touch incessantly, things never cease. The skirt of words invisibly divine.
Thank you. Helmut.
As if a trail of disappearing stars, they're showered upon the floating atmosphere, colors and lights and evanescent gleams that call to follow in your magic. And in each cry that fainted on the ear, there was the voice of an unrealized kiss. An adoration reigned in the yearning, a spirit of purity, an elusive presence of fairy beauty and unrasped delight, whose momentary and escaping thrill, however unsubstantial to our flesh, and brief even in imperishableness, much sweeter seemed than any rapture known, earth or all conquering heaven can ever be. Heaven, ever young, and earth too firm and holy, delay the heart by immobility. Their raptures of creation last too long, their bold formations are too obscure. Cast by an anguish of divine endeavor, they stand up sculptured on the eternal hills, or quarried from the living rocks of God, in immortality by perfect form. They are too intimate with eternal things, vessels of infinite significances. They are too clear, too great, too meaningful. No mist or shadow soothes the wondrous soul. No soft penumbra uncertainty.
Thank you. Tekeste, will you read? No. Mark.
These only touched the golden hem of bliss, the gleaming shoulder of some godlike hope, flying feet of exquisite desires. On a slow trembling brink between night and day, they shone like visitants from the morning sky, satisfied beginnings of perfection, first tremulous imaginings of a heavenly world. They mingled in a passion of perfume, thrilled with a spray of joy too slight to tire. All in this world was shadowed forth, not limited, like faces leaping on a fan of fire, or shapes of wonder in a tinted glass, like fugitive landscapes painting silver mists. Here, vision fled back from the side alarm, and sound softly fused from the ear's surprise, and the whole experience was a hasty joy. The joys here snatched were half-forbidden things, timorous soul riders delicately veiled, and when a goddess blossomed, being removed, the first desire and their white soul transfigured, a glimmering Eden crossed by fiery gleams, tremblous to expectation's fiery wound. But nothing is familiar yet with bliss.
Thank you, Marco.
All things in this fair realm were ever strange. In a fleeting gladness of untimed night, in an insistency of magic change, past vanishing hedges, hurrying hints of fields, mid the swift escaping lanes that fled her feet, journeying. She wished no end, as one through clouds travels upon a mountain ridge and hears the rising to him out of hidden that sound of invisible streams. She walked, deceived by the illusion of a mystic space. The charm of bodiless touches felt and heard. The sweetness says of voices high and deep, pouring like travelers upon seeking winds, melodiously with an alluring cry. As if a music old, yet ever new, moving suggestions on her heartstrings dwelt, thoughts that no habitation found, yet clung with passionate repetition to her mind, desires that thought not, happy only to leave, always the same and always unfulfilled, sang in her breast like a celestial lyre. Thus all could last, yet nothing ever be.
Thank you. Do you want to read?
In this beauty of mind, any visitor, rest in the rays of Vanita Satyavan before her, seeing the center of its charm, head of her loveliness of longing rays, and captain of the fancies of her soul. Even the dreadful majesty of death's face and its somber sadness could not darken nor slay the intangible luster of those fleeting skies. The somber shadow, sullen, implacable, made beauty and laughter more imperative. Enhanced by his ray, joy grew more bright and clear. His dark contrast, edging ideal sight, deepened unuttered meanings to the heart. Pain grew a trembling undertone of bliss, and transience, immortalities, floating hem, or moments wrought in which she looked more fair, its antithesis meaning her divinity.
Her divinity.
Divinity.
Let's pause there. Thank you. Rosa.
Seen hardly by a visionary mind.
Thank you. So we go back to page 601 after the break. Marianne.
There is a morning twilight of the moon, and there is a morning twilight of the dogs. The angels from sleep, their forms arise, and God's lonely nights are justified by the moon. There breaks a passion and splendor of new birth, and few winged visions stray across the leaves. Heaven's chanting throughout the world, waking the eyed space. The gleaming deities look beyond the scene and fashion in their thought the ideal world. Sprung from a limitless moment of desire that once had lodged in some abysmal heart.
Thank you. There's a famous phrase. The twilight of the gods, no? Wagner, is it?
Wagner.
Yes. Yes. But that is the god, the death of the gods. The gods, the twilight, they are fading. They are slipping into the darkness. But Sri Aurobindo reminds us that twilight comes twice a day. There's a morning twilight also. So what he is describing now is the morning twilight, the twilight before dawn. He spoke of the slow, struggling dawn, as the light is growing, and it is bringing this morning twilight of the gods. It's a kind of echo of the very beginning of the poem, which spoke of that hour before the gods awake. No? So now he's going to give an evocation of that waking up of the gods. Miraculous from sleep, their forms arise. It's as if we can even see them appearing. And God's long nights are justified by dawn. And that brings such a magical, miraculous light, which is also described in the very first section of the first canto of the poem, that magical light at the beginning of the day, before real sunrise. So this marks a new birth, this passion and splendor of new birth. And so straying across our lids, fleeting the lids of the eyes, no? Hue-winged visions. This can happen to us in a psychological sense also, when we're coming in contact with a higher light for the first time. There's a kind of waking up to new possibilities, and they present themselves not very, very clearly. They are not very clearly defined, but they're wonderful suggestions, wonderful hue-winged visions, visions that have beautiful colored wings. And of course in the early morning we hear heaven's chanting heralds, the birds wake up, there's the dawn chorus. We can hear it every morning. They wake up this dim-eyed space, it's not yet light. So those deities, those gods, as they're waking up, they are also still half dreaming, the dreaming deities. They look beyond the seen, beyond the apparent things. They look into the subtle worlds of possibilities. And they fashion, they shape in their thoughts the ideal worlds. So these ideal worlds, that's what Savitri now will be experiencing. These ideal worlds, they spring, they emerge from a limitless moment of desire. It doesn't belong to time, but once that desire, that wish had lodged in some abysmal heart, some deep, dark heart. Again, it's like the beginning of the poem, where there's this complete darkness, and then the first thing that happens is not light, but just a little movement. And that little movement gave room for an old, tired want, unfilled, a desire, an unsatisfied desire, that it had been asleep, at peace in its subconscious moonless cave. But it raises its head and looks for absent light. So it's like the beginning of the dawn, the first movement. There's a wish, a desire. So in the same way here, those ideal visions of possible future possibilities, they come out of some movement in the deep darkness. Audrey, would you like to go on?
Past was the heaviness of the eyeless dark, and all the sorrow of the night was dead. Surprised at lying in gray with broken hands, as one who wakes to find his dreams were true, into the happiest, misty twilight world, where all ran after life and joy and love. There, far off raptures grew more close in deep anticipations of delight. Forever eager to gasp and tell, they never grasp. Yet, breathe strange ecstasy.
Yes, thank you. Everything is running after light and joy and love and delight. Raptures, delights that seemed very distant, now they seem to come closer. Deep anticipations of delight. Something wonderful is going to happen. And they seem to be eager to be clasped, to be grasped and held. But they never are grasped, but still they breathe some ecstasy. This is the quality of that happy, misty, twilight world of the ideal. Don, would you like to read?
Yes, I would.
Savitri. She's been in the darkness, now suddenly she finds herself in this happy, misty twilight world. Yeah. Complete change from all that terror and emptiness and loneliness and darkness.
A pearl winged indistinctness fleeting swam, an air that dared not suffer too much light. They fused through there. They passed through the leaves. They fused. They seemed dim hearted in 15 days. They cattle white, roamed blue in the mist. They spirits wandered with a bodiless cry. They melodies touched the soul and fled, pursued into harmonious distances, unseized. Forms subtly elusive and half-luminous powers, wishing no goal for their unearthly course, strayed happily through vague ideal lands, or floated without footing for their walk. Or their walk left steps of reverie on sweet memory's ground, or they paced to the mighty measure of their thoughts, led by a low, far chanting of the gods.
Thank you.
Something vague in there, you think?
Yes, it's very vague, no? Indistinct. Pearl-winged indistinct. It's indistinct and beautiful because it's so vague. misty. There's movement, no? It's as if she's moving through this misty landscape. And the things around her are also moving. No, this is the world of the ideal. And there's not much physical to it. I mean, it's in some realm of inner consciousness. It's this waking up to possibilities, to new, wonderful, attractive, alluring possibilities that never touch ground. They don't seem to, their only ground is sweet memories ground. You think, oh, yes, I remember something beautiful like that. They're floating. They don't, you know, we talk about having our feet firmly on the ground. Nothing there has its feet firmly on the ground. There's no firm ground.
No ground.
But it's so beautiful, so convincing in its way. You have to speak up, Margaret.
As far as Papi's journey, went there to the heavens of the ideal. Is this something similar or is there a difference?
Yes, he went to the heavens of the ideal, it's true. This is a plane of existence. Yes. Here this is, we have to think of this in terms of Savitri's journey, which is through the night, through the double twilight. So this is the first twilight she's being shown that she has to pass through, which is the twilight of the ideal. The thing about ideals is that they are attractive, they're powerful, they're inspiring, but they are not realized. They don't, when they become real, they're not ideals anymore. Mm-hmm. And then the second twilight that she will come to at the end of the book is, at the end of book 10, is the dream twilight of the earthly real. But this twilight seems to be a dream of those awakening gods, waking up into the light. They have fashioned in their thoughts these ideal worlds. And now Savitri enters into them, and they are so beautiful. We read on, would you like to read? Line 130.
A ripple of evening winds crossed the far sky. Birds like pale bosomed imaginations flew, with low disturbing voices of desire. And half heard longings filled the listening ear, as if the sun god's brilliant kind were there. Hidden in mist and passing towards the sun, these fugitive beings, these elusive shapes, were all that claimed the eye and met the soul, the natural inhabitants of that world. But nothing there was fixed or stayed for long. No mortal feet could rest upon that soil. No breath of life lingered embodied there. In that fine chaos, joy like dancing past, and beauty evaded blind and form, and hid its sense in mysteries of hue, yet gladness ever repeated the same notes, and gave the sense of an enduring world. There was a strange consistency of shapes, and the same thoughts were constant passers-by, and all renewed unendingly its charm, alluring ever the expectant heart. Like music that one always waits to hear, like the recurrence of a haunting rhyme.
Thank you. It's really beautiful, no? Morning sky, a ripple of gleaming wings, We can see those birds in the distance, pale bosom, but they are like imaginations, they're not really real. We hear their cries, they are very disturbing, troubling. They speak of distant desires. And then another thing that we can hear is the lowing of these cows. Lowing. Lowing, that's what cows do. Yeah. Yeah. So it's only half heard, only very faintly. It attracts the listening ear. And he says, it's as if the sun god's brilliant kine were there, hidden in mist and passing towards the sun. So there's a whole rich collection of association with these kine, these cattle of the sun god. Of course, in the Vedas it is there that these cows have been stolen and hidden away in a dark cave. Now it seems as if they've been set free from the cave. They are passing through the mist nearby. They can't be seen, but they're moving back towards the sun. These wonderful rays of light that have been hidden in the darkness. And the same myth is there in Greek mythology, that the cattle, the cows of the sun god have been stolen. Helmut and I have even visited a cave which is supposed to have been the cave where they were hidden. It didn't seem to be big enough, really. But they also had to be set free. And they had been hidden, they were taken backwards. So if you followed the trail, you were going towards the sun, and they were dragged backwards by their tails into the cave. So, but they represent, these cows, they represent the powers of light, the illuminations that come from the divine sun, which with all its energy and power and light. So everything one sees or perceives there in that world are like that. They're fugitive, they're passing, they're elusive, we can't catch hold of them. That's what we see, what was seen and what the soul felt. They are the natural inhabitants of that world. But nothing stays for long. Yes, Audrey.
Could you look at it also as if one's perception couldn't stand to see it as it is? So it has to go.
Well, they're not showing their full, powerful reality, no? Showing hints of themselves, dream forms of themselves. All these things.
You couldn't understand, or I know this is that world, so this is talking about gods, but...
It's also, even for the gods, it's a dream world. It's not a created world. It's not a fully manifested world. It's a world of thoughts and perceptions. And,
So the world will change for them.
I'm not going to say anything about that. We will follow the journey and see what happens. Yeah.
It just seems to me that this taking place after Savitri's kind of splitting open the night or something, that this could be like a new creation coming, or like the vague hints. Of the new creation.
Yes, of something new and wonderful. Yeah. But it doesn't say what it is, no? It's not solid. No mortal feet could rest upon that soil. no breath of life even, there's no life. Even beauty, it's so interesting, he says there's beauty there, but it evaded, it avoids fixed line and form. There are no fixed lines and forms. Beauty expresses itself only in colors, vague colors, mysteries of hue. And yet, everything is moving and vague, and yet there's some kind of repetition. It's that repetition of similar shapes and suggestions that gives the sense of an enduring world. But maybe it's not really an enduring world. There is some consistency of shapes. The same thoughts come again and again, suggestions. And everything goes on renewing unendingly its charm, alluring the ever-expectant heart. You're always waiting for it. It's always lovely when it comes back. Music that one's waiting to hear, or the recurrence in poetry of a recurring rhyme that comes back and back in a very charming way. So there's nothing fixed there. Yes, Patty?
The generating power, I think. I remember Vladimir used to say that the Ashwins were moving in the sky. In the Veda class, he used to say they're moving in the sky in that time, before the dawn.
Before the dawn. Yeah, we wouldn't have dawn if we didn't go through the night. The night gives birth to the dawn, and the dawn gives birth eventually to another night.
It's the time to get your inspiration.
Yes.
So there's a difference then between darkness and night. Night is of this earth, or anything like it.
Well, night in this poem, this poem has really so many different meanings. Sometimes it means physical night that we experience here on earth, but usually when it's got a capital N, it refers normally to the night of unconsciousness, the darkness when consciousness is withdrawn or asleep. But it also, in some places, refers to the night of falsehood, the opposite of the truth light. So it depends on the context, what it means.
I understand that, but if there's night, there's day, or night is a lie, then there's a day, the light of truth, and so on. But
we just passed through, Don, we just passed through the eternal night. She passed through a realm in which there seemed to be no possibility of light ever. No, she had to pass through that experience. It's a psychological experience, a state in which there seems to be no possibility of light. He calls it eternal night. And along with that night, there also seems to be an absence of anything. You know, it's a void, it's empty, there's no communication. It's a psychological state. In fact, all these things are psychological states. So now she's moved into a much more beautiful and attractive psychological state. Yes? Sorry?
The night which Savitri passed through belongs to this ideal world?
No. Well, these are different states of being, modes of being. Our physical night represents for us that dark night of the soul when there's seems to be no knowledge, no consciousness, no hope, no nothing. She's experiencing a kind of dawning now.
The good news here is that you can know now that when things look absolutely the worst, that your daughter is coming.
Yeah. Yes, those are the last lines. That's the last lines, no, of the poem. Page 724. Night, splendid, with the moon dreaming in heaven, in silver peace, possessed her luminous reign. She brooded through her stillness on a thought, deep guarded by her mystic folds of light, and in her bosom nursed a greater dawn. Wow. So we'll stop there for today.
Thanks to Shri Aurobindo.